So the first speaker will be one of the winners of these awards of distinction, and he's Bernie Lubel, an artist from San Francisco, whose work is also probably a little bit exceptional in the context of Ars Electronica, because as if you have seen the work, it doesn't contain any electronic components at all, because Bernie does work using wooden pneumatics and that kind of ideas, which, as I know very well, doesn't mean that he didn't have very highly developed computer skills. Bernie could do things with computers and digital art, so it's a choice of using wood. And so, but I would rather like Bernie to explain that for yourself. So our first speaker will be Bernie Lubel.
Oh, good, I can almost see the screen. This is good.
What?
Okay, so I wanted to first talk about the piece that's here at the OCA Center. This is the Conservation of Intimacy, a different installation than the one you have here, but pretty much the same. This is me in all three places because I didn't have anyone to help me do the shoot the day I was shooting. So I just put myself, I took my hat off and added hair to, which is, very, Photoshop is very handy. When I, I'll tell you a story relating to how to fix things with computers, physiological problems, just using the, fixing the cosmetics of them. But, I'm not, I have to go back because we jumped out of the right mode here. So my apologies, but for some reason I lost my mirroring mode. And I need that so that I can see what I'm about to say, or my non-mirroring mode, that's the key. Okay, now maybe we go back and let's see, I have to say okay somewhere. There I am. Okay, once more. This looks better because now I have notes and I can't remember anything without writing them down. So, to fully appreciate this piece of mine and almost all my work, it's really about being physically involved, having, your whole body or as much of your body as I can figure out how to do, get it involved, and to understand things because you're participating in them, because you're part of it, rather than an observer looking at it from the outside. So, it's in a way you could say I'm trying to develop a set, that you can perform your own play in, like a theater in a sense. Here's a video of the installation of the piece that we have here. And we have some audio, okay, good. And this is, if you haven't been to the OCA Center, this is a little preview. It's pretty short. There are some hidden balls that are being moved by this pneumatic system. And as you're rocking on the bench, and it works much better if you're a couple than if you're alone. So, this is kind of the message of the piece, if you will. It's the Conservation of Intimacy, is the name of the piece. I'll get to the title later. But and this, there's one spot, if you move side to side, you can blow in the ear of the person on the bike. So it's kind of a fully cooperative enterprise. You have two people on the bench and a third person pulling the paper down by riding the bike. And then as you move on the bench, you ride it with the pens and you move the balls. And so you get this kind of feedback loop going between what you're doing and what the other people are doing and the record of it. As I was saying, it works best if you're working with somebody. And you know, I don't know how to use. See, even though Erki says I know about computers, I still don't have the right, you know, codecs for doing this QuickTime thing. So my apologies for all the choppiness and the little scanning lines and stuff that are happening. Originally I added the pen and writing system as a kind of a joking commentary on how we analyze everything, and you know, we're trying to put intimacy into a scientific situation. But I was actually surprised when I added this that it works. You can actually read what people are doing on the bench. You can see whether they're working with each other or whether they're kind of fighting with each other, or if it's just one person, or if they're just kind of doing this bounce, or if they're kind of slowly, you know, languorously, you know, working together. So, I think, true in a lot of my work. I have this sense that I'm kind of being a little bit satirical about the uses of science, and yet I love it. You know, I'm totally enamored of it at the same time as I'm being critical. And in fact, this is the starting point, because all my work, all these pneumatic systems that I'm showing here at least, are derived from the work of a 19th century French physiologist, Etienne Jules Marais. And in a sense, you could say I'm expanding Marais' work into the field of intimacy. From where he was. This is the kind of work that Marais is most famous for, I think, are these what he called chronophotography, these multiple images on a single plate. These are from, I don't know what, about 1870, 1880, somewhere around then. He's also, you know, he also invented motion picture cameras after this, and it, you know, may be the father of motion pictures, but there's a lot of patent disputes about this. What I love about these images, of course, is the way that they, that there is no past or future. There's only a present. You know, there's a present that, you know, that can't be held at all. So Marais' life work was trying to understand motion, because for him motion was life, and for him everything, all life was mechanical in a sense. So this is a mechanical metaphor for things that I think is sort of deeply at the heart of maybe a lot of work here at Ars Electronica. But before he got into photography, Marais was doing these pneumatic physiological systems, which make my work look kind of mundane and normal. It's just a normal outgrowth of Marais' work. This is a system with a pneumatic tambour to measure the way the lips are moving during speech. And then he's got another mouthpiece in here where you can actually kind of feel the breath, the pressure of the breath. And then he would take it and use more of these pneumatic tambours to write, you know, just exactly like I was doing with the conservation of intimacy. And Marais is really kind of, in many ways, responsible for the whole field of medical imaging. There were other people doing things like this at the time, but Marais really kind of pulled everyone's work together and created what he called the graphic method. Here he's got, on the top you have a polygraph, but here's a man with a pneumatic shoe and a headset. Which also is pneumatically indicating how he's leaning, whether he's leaning forward or backward as he's running. So Marais was trying to understand the nuances of physical action. Here's a whole horse hooked up with pneumatic sensors, and the rider is carrying the chart recorder, you know, a smoked glass cylinder, and he's got these hoses coming up. It's hard to imagine this at a full gallop, but I think that it was, Marais would get is the pneumatic sensor on the horse's foreleg, you know, so that as it tenses when it hits the ground, you get a record, and you get these records like this that he would make of the notation of a horse's hoofs as they hit the ground, and apparently it was this work that that Leland Stanford saw, because Marais had shown that all four of the horse's legs would leave the ground at a full gallop, but he'd shown it with notation like this. So Stanford hired Edward Muybridge to take these photographs of a horse in motion. You know, Muybridge developed his system with multiple cameras, and there the arrow indicates the cell where Muybridge proves that all four of the horses' hooves had leaked. So in France, it's Marais who had proven this, and in America, it's Muybridge who had proven this. So interestingly enough, it comes kind of full circle because Marais saw these photographs, and this is what got him interested in making photography, using photography to represent motion. But I'm mostly interested in the pneumatic equipment. So here again is the pneumatics applied to a bird to check out what the bird's wing is doing in flight. And obviously this bird couldn't fly very long before it destroys the apparatus. So he made this huge cradle, you know, that you can see on the bottom, the large view and then the close view, where the bird could fly forever in a circle, you know, with the tambour is no longer mounted directly on his wing. Maybe we skip a little bit of Marais here, skip forward a little bit, and this is a pulse meter. And it's the medical imaging that I think was most, you know, near to my heart, literally. This is a simulation of heart action, normal and abnormal heart, you know, response. And this particular engraving, I saw this engraving in 1994, and also some of Marais' apparatus at a museum in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And this led me to this idea that, you know, that I just had to do something with this work. And then a year later, I'm diagnosed with an aortic aneurysm. This is my echocardiogram. It's kind of the direct result, you could say, of Marais' work, this kind of imaging. You're only supposed to have one, either blue or red, coming out at the, of the orifice at one time. For me, unfortunately, I had both. You know, the blood was coming and going at the same moment. And, you see, you know, pretty bad. They wanted to operate that day. And this is the story. They wanted to operate that day, and I said, well, you're basing all of this on a videotape. Why don't we just re-edit the video? But but they had absolutely no sense of humor. but I did manage to get the operation postponed nonetheless. We're done anyway. So this is the piece that I did that arose out of the out of this work. About 3 or 4 years later. So audio, please. Yeah. This, you recognize this probably as Marais' apparatus that image that I started from. But here I'm pumping air rather than fluids. And then once I had this apparatus moving, this is, of course, very typical of my work. Once I have something working, I see, well, this is rotating, so I'm going to attach a belt to it. And I've got the heart beating, but I don't have the sound of the heartbeat. So... this is kind of that sound, that privileged sound you would get if you laid your head on someone's chest, where you might also hear their stomach gurgling. But in fact, the gurgle is really there to provide a certain amount of back pressure, so that this next apparatus will, this lung, I call it, in a bath, will be throbbing. Everything being driven by the crank outside. And interestingly enough, when you're outside working the crank, you can't see anything else that's going on. You can't see any of the effects you're having. So you kind of need to have another person helping you in a way. You know, so they go in and look, and then you take turns, you know, with someone. And this kind of seems, you know, at least somewhat right for a piece about the heart, I think. So the natural question is, maybe I'm trying to get some kind of control of my life, you know, my body, you know, by making a piece about my own heart condition. But this is the kind of control that I gravitate towards, you know. It's, you know, the peace I make is very fragile and tenuous, and it's not like a deep, you know, secure understanding. It's like, oh, well, maybe I'm wrong. Oh, well, maybe I'm even wrong about being wrong, and, you know, and so on. So I come up with these flow charts like this, and yet, you know, I these seem to make sense to me when I'm making them, but when I look back at them, I can't understand a thing I was thinking, you know. So they organize my thoughts, but they're completely disorganized. And I have this kind of interesting relationship to words. You know, this is a little piece about my relationship to words, also using Marais technology. That it's a pneumatic pantograph that's being driven by a questionnaire which asks you to pick a word that you think best describes where you are now and trace from word to word till you get to your idea of what heaven might be. And so as you fill out this questionnaire, it's an aphasiagram because it's actually winds up stripping the words away, which you'll see in a moment. Five. Well, maybe I'll skip something. So it transmits the action to another room where it's drawing the results out, but without any words anymore. So it's a personal path that you have. Some of my key words. So I jump a little quickly, but I always have one of these little boxes in my installations just in case something happens. I have an out of order sign because, you know, you never can tell when you're going to need this. And even though I don't believe in the power of words, I still think maybe I better cover myself just in case, you know. So I have this this system there. So, you know, so my work is this sort of out of control aspect of my work, because it grows without my really being in control of it, is in a way summed up by this piece, which is a piece about being lost on the ocean at night. And so this takes three people to operate. And this big black plastic sheet, you know, you ride the bike, you make this plastic sheet start undulating, and it really, you know, had this oceanic kind of feeling to it. It was, it has to be 6 mil plastic, 4 mil plastic, too light, 10 mil plastic, too heavy. So, and then, you know, if you're making landfall at night, and you're out on the ocean, what you're looking for is lights on the horizon. And for me, you know, when you row this boat, if you look at the distant horizon of my black plastic ocean, you'll see the lights glowing up there as you're rowing the boat. But you get tired rowing the boat, and the lights go out. You never get home, really. So it's kind of a sad piece with a sense of humor. One minute. Ah, well, we'll skip to the last pieces then. Let's jump ahead. We skip this, we skip that, we skip that, and we get to the piece itself, which is a piece about death. The preamble for that, I'm sorry, I was running too long. So, but this is a piece, you know, piece about life, piece about death. This is a piece, kind of a model of the brain. You get to crank yourself into a coffin here. And then you, it's quite kind of nice. I have some sounds coming in of water dripping, but they're coming through these long spring.
I'm here.
You get to talk to people who are left outside still, you see.
Hello?
Who's in there?
Hello?
deal of distortion when the sound goes along these. I think the longest one was about 10 meters, the strings. And then they, you know, I had some of them with piezos and amplifiers and speakers, but the speakers were just driving the spring so that it was kind of still a tin can telephone. And I won't explain the big boom, but there is a big booming thing going on too. The forlorn shoes, I think. You know, I was going to show this piece in Ireland, and what they did was they put on the poster the shoes. The big poster for the piece was the shoes. So maybe we stop there, and thank you. Yeah.
Okay, Bernie, thank you very much for the wonderful presentation.